Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell. I'm here today with Gene Brooks of the Online News Association.
That was smooth.
Thank you. And the gentleman you hear is Tom Jackman of the Washington Post.
That's
He's also the reporter slash editor of State of Northern Virginia. What is the State of Northern Virginia?
It's excellent.
Excellent.
Oh, you meant what is the blog itself?
Yes.
You weren't just asking me for an assessment of
Yes.
Northern Virginia. The State of Nova is a blog that I created in 2011 of news and people in the five jurisdictions immediately outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia: Arlington, Alexandria, Fairfax, Loudoun, and Prince William counties. Alexandria is a city. And I've been based in Fairfax County for 14 years for the Post, covering cops and courts and various other stuff, big stories, little stories. And I grew up in Fairfax County. And I know a lot of people that are actually from there. It's sort of, I think the target audience really is the people mm-hmm. that are from Northern Virginia. And there's this sort of cliche that, oh, Washington's a transient area. There's people washing in, washing out. Well, baloney. We got to clean up our language here, right?
Yes.
And so, no, that's baloney. There are a lot of people who are from here, who grew up here, who live here, who, you know, like it here, who are not ashamed to say they're from mm-hmm. Northern Virginia. And there are a lot of great people from our area, and there are a lot of really cool things going on. And so it has a somewhat boosterish tone at times
right.
because I'm saying, look at this girl from Alexandria who just won the U.S. Women's Figure Skating Championship, Ashley
right.
Wagner. Or look at this guy from Springfield who was the drummer in Nirvana and now might be running the best rock and roll band in the land, Dave
yes.
Grohl of the Foo Fighters. And I'm, you know, an unremitting fan of that. I will be campaigning soon for a statue on Dave Grohl's behalf. But anyway, I also write what I believe to be news that isn't being covered anywhere else. And about the big new roads being planned out there in Northern Virginia, which may or may not be needed, the baseball stadium that they're building in Loudoun County, the political weirdness in Prince William County. Today, I had a story it's in the newspaper. It started out on the blog about the various battles that the counties out there and little towns have had over water
mm-hmm.
and who's going to provide the water and who's going to charge for the water. Call me wacky, but I think water is sort of a big deal.
I think you get your water the same place I do, which is a lake in Loudoun County.
That's correct.
We both get our water from the city of Fairfax.
Right.
Even though I live in the county, but you live
but
in
not
the
for much longer because
what?
They just decided they're going to stop doing that. You apparently did not read The State of Nova, young man.
No, I did not.
So anyway, yeah, the city of Fairfax decided that they are going to get out of the water business, right? They've got a reservoir 23 miles away.
Yeah.
They got a pipe that
yeah.
goes 23 miles to bring us the water.
So 1961?
And correct. It is as old as me, the plant, not the water. And so they have decided, plus they charge us almost twice what the people in Fairfax County pay.
Yeah.
So they've got to upgrade that plant, which will cost bajillions.
Yeah.
They're already charging us too much. They're going to charge us more. So they decided, why don't we just get on the Fairfax County plan? And Falls Church and Vienna, which also operate their own water utilities, have decided the same thing. We need to just, you know, get out of the water business and let Fairfax County do this.
So where will we get our water? From Occoquan?
From either Occoquan or the Potomac, but after it's been heavily treated and filtered by the 21st century technology of Fairfax County.
It tastes so good that way.
There is an argument about that, you know, we get it from a stream out in Loudoun
mm-hmm.
County and Fairfax County draws it from the filth of the Potomac. Those are someone else's words, not mine.
Yes.
And so, you know, but they clean it and they have an updated, modernized two treatment plants that we've written about in the State of Nova. And, I've also written about legislative stuff that is interesting to Northern Virginia. I try to mm-hmm. stay out of politics because I think the Washington Post already does a lot of politics,
right.
and I think it can be massively dull. But I've found some things that were interesting. There was a guy from Northern Virginia who proposed a bill that would study the creation of a new currency for Virginia in the event that the United States currency goes down. And so I wrote about that and suggested who from Virginia should possibly be on the new Virginia currency. And then I conducted a reader poll,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, Dave Grohl won. He was selected by the readers as the person who should appear on the new Virginia coins.
Yeah. Well, excellent. The phrase that we haven't mentioned here, but I think that you have adequately described, is community journalism.
Right.
You are a community journalist.
Right.
You are embedded. You're covering it. You didn't come to the Washington Post to cover Beirut or the political situation in
right.
Washington. You're covering you know, where the tire hits the ground.
I think it's important. Again, call me crazy, but I think people should and need to know about the news in where they live. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, where are we getting our water from? I could probably, you were pretty interested in that whole water dispatch I just related to you. And, you know, or what's happening at George Mason, a university in Fairfax, Virginia, which is the biggest university in Virginia now.
Yeah.
And,
whose basketball team did go to the Final Four, but is not particularly good this year.
That's right.
So that's something we need to.
So there is a lot of actual news. And as the Post has gotten bigger and smaller at the same time, bigger in scope, smaller in people, our focus on local news has diminished.
Mm-hmm. And I would agree with that.
I think that we should continue to cover local news and that we have people here that will pay for that.
Now, my own experience in Northern Virginia, I was a reporter, then an editor at the Connection Newspapers, which was a chain of newspapers, which is still is a chain of newspapers that covers mostly Fairfax County, Alexandria, Arlington, but also they have a paper in Potomac, Maryland. And I gained a real appreciation for community journalism. And I think it's, you know, I've had conversations in the past where people say, oh, well, the potential on the web for community journalism is huge. But nobody seems to be, like, going after it. And nobody seems to be going at it certainly as well as you have, which is the reason why I asked you in here, is to talk about community journalism, what, you know, why it's important. I think you've sort of touched on that it's important because it's where people live.
Right. But, and this is where we draw on Gene's expertise, is that we can write all the local news we want, but will people, A, pay money for it, and B, will advertisers advertise mm-hmm. in it? And that, the answer has not been so great so far.
Well, that leads me to a question of you've clearly identified who your audience is. What's their preference for news consumption now? Are they still buying the paper? Are they going to your website? Are they looking for it in other platforms? And sort of how does the distribution model impact your, maybe not your reporting, but...
Well, it depends on how old they are. If they're under 40, they are absolutely not buying the newspaper. There's nobody under the age of 40 mm-hmm. that will be caught dead holding a print edition of the Washington
Post. Oh, well,
Post.
That's not true.
Well, not many. A very small number.
wake up, Jerry.
I'm only 32. I'm
right.
in that demographic.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm glad. And, you know, we're going to give you a certificate later. It's one of the few.
Tom, I'm sorry. I'm not paying your salary.
Right.
I don't subscribe anymore.
Right. So both of you are, you know, outliers in this demographic that I have just definitively defined as the young people not buying the newspaper, mm-hmm. older people still buying the newspaper. Mm-hmm. We still sell 500,000 print editions a day. And
that's a lot of trees.
700,000. That's right. Well, we're growing them, so we can cut them down.
Oh, okay.
So 500,000 during the day, during the week, 700,000 on Sundays of print edition. But that number steadily going down.
And with it, the display advertising
right.
is going
and
down as
the
well.
The amount that newspapers can charge for print advertising is way more than they can charge for web advertising. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, even as the web advertising rises, the rate for that is much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And so the money made is far less. And for the Washington Post, their online presence is worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And so vast amounts of readers come from overseas and from elsewhere in the country. And so stories that are about national politics and world politics get huge readership.
Mm-hmm.
When I do a story and I get a lot of readers, if I get 200 or 300 comments on a story, that's massive for me.
Yeah.
But for something on the national desk, that's nothing. It's like nobody even saw that story.
Yeah.
So,
but for the people in the D.C. area, the people in the suburbs that you're covering, I mean, that's what I learned by being a community news editor is that, you know, that really touches a lot of people, that type
it
of reporting.
It does. It absolutely does.
Well, and I also wonder, too, 200 or 300 comments is that's a lot of engagement. What's the conversation that's happening? So instead of valuing the quantity, what's the quality there?
It's not bad. It can be pretty good. They go back and forth. Last week, I posted a short story that said it was Gun Lovers Support Starbucks Day, in which people who support the right to openly carry your weapons in Virginia,
Northern Virginia, you can
walk around in the state with a gun on your hip. And they appreciate the fact that Starbucks does not keep them out of the store. And so they all organized to go into Starbucks and pack heat and buy Joe. And so
they need to be alert. They're carrying guns. They need to be alert.
A ferocious discussion ensued about this in the comments. It was largely civil, and over 700 comments of people discussing whether or not this is a good idea. And it was pretty good. Now, I'm not going to say that there aren't a lot of badness in those comments, but the Post at least has started putting humans on the moderating and are trying to keep things clean.
Yeah.
So here's a buzzword for you. Impact. What was the impact out of those comments? Did anything happen as a result?
No one got shot. So that's a good thing.
In the arguments, though, that happened, the conversation that happened in the comments.
Did people's minds seem to get changed, or was there a...
Did anyone organize in any way?
Yeah. I don't know. On that issue, I think people have pretty much made up their minds. Now, I will say that I've written a number of stories, and I'm working on some now about George Mason, that have had impact, that have changed things. I wrote about a kid that wrote a book, a little picture book. He's 7 years old, and he wanted to raise $15,000 so he could buy a dog because he was autistic. And
that was a huge story for you.
Right. He had printed like 400 books that he was going to sell at $10 a book. And, the people just turned out massively for this book sale, and he raised $50,000 or $60,000 bought dogs for other people as well as himself. And so... Because I have access to this website and this audience, I can have that kind of impact with stories, which is the same with the print edition. But in general, local stories don't do nearly as well on the web as world and national
stories. But I think, this is one of those things where it's difficult to sort of measure the importance of it. Because I know that my experience in community journalism was that, certain types of stories we would do that would have huge impacts. So we wrote about the the tank farm,
sure,
outside of or in the city of Fairfax. And we got a ton of traffic on that. We got a ton of comments on that.
Right.
Whenever we did anything about Clifton Elementary, the school, the community school, long time community school in a very small community, was closing, and it turned into this huge fight in the county and at the Board of Supervisors, and there were all these political ramifications that came out of it. And, we got traffic on our website, we got people writing letters to us, and then also just the very human stories of, the teenagers who
hey, I'm down, killed or something. But how do we monetize that?
Yeah, well,
Gene, I need answers now.
Maybe we can't monetize. Maybe this is, it's all a matter of the level of where... how big your audience can be.
I think it's more about creatively experimenting with new revenue structures. Mm-hmm. So when we fall back on, ads, they don't make as much on the web as they do mobile, that is an old model being applied to a new structure.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were on the business team of the Washington Post, I would probably be digging...
What's left of the business team of the Washington Post?
Keep going. Hey, don't interrupt.
I would probably go and examine, do an analysis of your user behavior, your audience behavior, and identify ways that they are willing to contribute in some way. So might that look like... I know the Washington Post is toying with subscriber models, but, maybe that looks like an event that raises money or,
right.
I don't know, something outside of the box. But I think as, we're looking at these traditional models and they don't work digitally.
Right.
So where's the creativity there? And I think we're not really seeing news groups experimenting.
Right.
Yeah. And we had the name escapes me at the moment. We had a reporter from an arts reporter from the Denver Post in, and he was talking about, and they have a very successful entertainment section, and they do sponsorships for events and bands and things as a way to bring in revenue. So basically looking in a sort of different way. And I don't think the three of us are going to crack this problem, because it's a problem that a lot of people have been putting their minds on it.
Right.
Certainly much bigger brains than us are trying to...
But I'm frustrated because I want community journalism to continue.
Yeah.
I do think it's important. I do think it has impact, but the numbers are not comparable in readership, at least at our paper, because we also have access to, people coming in at 2:30 in the morning from France who are, reading about Obama.
But who knows? Maybe there's a way to... because the newspaper, everything that was in the newspaper, the traditional newspaper, was not... you know, producing audience. There were specialized sections of it
right.
that had targeted ads to it. Maybe there's a way to target ads. Maybe there's a way to let the huge sports section pay for the garden section, which may not get
right.
a lot of whatever.
I mean,
maybe that or the comic section. There are ways to, you know, let the strengths of the website pay for some of the other things that are, you know, I don't know if we still get in these conversations where, you know, what our mission is, you know, is a mission strictly to make money and to figure out what is the most popular thing. You know, the Washington Post does not have cats on its front page every day.
Right.
If it was just strictly that, if it should, then yeah, you want to get your traffic up.
Right.
But the, you know, that local audience is highly engaged and loyal.
Yes.
Right.
And which says to me that they would be willing to pay for this, but we're not asking them the right way.
Now, we used to get you know, our like a high school sports schools, particular in community reporting, were like really valuable. People liked it when you went to the play, when you covered football games or you interviewed you know, award winning students or stuff. And you know, parents like to get their kids' pictures in the paper. So I mean, there's a value. There's something that people see that in. The problem is, you know, and this, I share the concern that you have that this is a type of reporting that a lot of people don't talk about as important in the larger conversation of what's going on with journalism. The fact is that, like Gene observed very, very correctly, that people are engaged with this type of reporting. They want to know if there's going to be a stop sign put at this one intersection. They want to know if, you know, if the school is going to close or is it going to they want to know these very, very, very local stories.
Right.
Just they're not going to get the huge audience.
Right.
So how do you monetize it? How do you cover it?
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Well, and that's why we created the State of Nova, is to give people a place to go to find, to at least get some of that news, mm-hmm. if not all.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a really great site. Now, just give me a typical day. What is it you do to get that content on that site?
Well, I have a lot of just sources of info. I certainly check the community papers and the blogs, but I get tips from people I know, from folks at the courthouse where I worked for many years. I know people all around the various the counties. I get tips from people I've never met,
mm-hmm.
Who, you know, are familiar with the blog and wanted, you know, think this is a story that should be out there. I get pitches from public relations people sometimes, mm-hmm. that I think are interesting. I see things in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I keep my eyes open.
This
it's
stuff never
easy.
Dries up.
It's easy, right? I mean, if you couldn't come up with a thousand stories on this beat, then you need to get another job.
Now, one of the things that before we started recording, we were sort of joking back and forth about when I first contacted you. One of the things you said was, "Oh, I'm a print journalist." And we, you know, I was like, well, yeah, we're talking about digital journalism. We're also talking about journalism in general. Your approach, you haven't necessarily changed your approach. You still do the things that you would always do.
Right. Although I try to do more because I feel like the web is this yawning chasm that needs to be fed all the time. And I was trying to do 2 to 3 things a day for a while and was killing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to do 1 to 2 things a day or at least 1 thing a day.
Mm-hmm.
Try to keep them a little shorter and snappier than the newspaper,
mm-hmm.
Because it's online and because it has my little smiling mugshot at the top.
Mm-hmm.
I'm granted a little leeway in terms of maybe inserting a little attitude or,
mm-hmm.
you know, wordplay into mm-hmm. the stories that wouldn't make it into the print edition. And a lot of times when they take stuff from the blog and put it in the print edition, they have to, you know, denude it. They have to clean it up. You know, they have to de-blog it. I'm going to de-jackmanize
it. Take the soul out
of
it.
Yeah, that's right. Take all the jokes out. First thing I do, remove jokes.
All the profanity and the
right. And so no jokes. But I, you know, I have that leeway to write about what I like. They give me very little direction in terms of what they want out of it because I think they have faith that, well, he's the one out there. The Washington Post is all down in Washington, D.C. I'm in Fairfax, Virginia. And I've been out there for a while now, 14 years.
Though they wouldn't know where Fairfax was.
You know, I couldn't say what one person might or might not know, but I'm out there and they trust my judgment when mm-hmm. I say to them, I think I should write a story about, you know, this giant road that's being built through Loudoun and Prince William, or I think I should write a story about these problems at George Mason University, or I think I should write a story about this really cool person at George Mason University. Mm-hmm. And they basically just nod their head and say, yeah, do that. I think I got away from your question, which was, what's the difference?
What was my question? My question was really about your approach. I mean, you still do, I mean, you interview people,
right.
You do all of the same things that you would normally, that right. you've always done.
Research, legal research in a lot of cases, because a number of my stories still tend to have some sort of legal prong to them. Finding experts, talking to both sides.
So you pretty, yeah, you do all of the same sort of.
Like right now, I'm working on a story about a woman that was denied in-state tuition at George Mason under controversial circumstances, shall we say. And that is a difference of $10,000 a semester or $20,000 a year. It's a big deal. And so I've had to educate myself about what the rules are on that. There's state law, there's state guidelines, there's experts, there's people that do this. I mean, George Mason has lawyers who help them make these decisions on these people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've gotten the And this actually arose from a comment. I had written about a Navy veteran who had been denied in-state tuition after she'd been transferred out of Virginia by the Navy. When she was done in the Navy, she moved back, and George Mason said, no, you're not in-state. And she appealed and lost and then took it to court and won. And now it's going to the state Supreme Court and could set a precedent. So anyway, write that story. Somebody posts a comment that says, well, you should hear this story. My daughter, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, really? Well, so I posted a comment that said, what, you know, if you want to talk about this more, here's my email address, email me. So they did. And, I met the guy Monday, and then I went to George Mason and said, what's the deal here? And, in the meantime, started, you know, really digging into how do you define who lives in Virginia and who's eligible to get the good rate. I mean, it's really affordable to go to George Mason if you're in Virginia, and if you're not from Virginia, whoa.
So do you get an opportunity with being on the web as opposed to being in print? Just if something comes up where you want to just go big, can you go big on something?
I can. The internet is infinite, I like to say. And so I have a lot more space there. And it's not bloggy in that way. It's really not. Right. It's not like a blog in that I will write a 35 or 40 inch story. And people can stop reading at any time, I have found. If you don't want to read a 40 inch story, you just go to the next thing. And in newspapers, they have to have these set limits for space because space is finite. And they decide, usually before even the story is written, how long this story will be.
Right.
Editor Bob, I'm going to write a story about X. Well, that sounds like that's worth 14 inches. Okay. And there it is, 14 inches. If I find out that the story, you know, unveils who actually killed John Kennedy, that's, well, we blocked 14 inches out for this. So that's what you're getting.
The priests of journalism.
Right. And so I have unlimited length. I don't try to abuse that. But then, and then when those stories go in the paper, they, of course, get hacked down and they take them from the bottom and they take the jokes out and it looks different. But it is a great luxury to have. And I think that readers on the web appreciate that they can get the whole story. I know for many years, you know, 28 some years that I wrote for print, that we couldn't fit the whole story in stories because there wasn't enough space to tell. To give all the details that might really flesh out what's going on here. Just you have to boil it down to the basics and get it into 14 inches or 400 words or whatever.
Do you find yourself following up on stories more frequently than you would in print?
The same as I did. I always followed up in print. It's a, you know, a revered gimmick of print is to, you know, go back to that story and see what's happening now. And I don't think it's done enough on the web. I think a lot of people on the web write a story and never go back. And I have
the next new story.
A lot of stories that I put in the headline update, you know, or I'll find a I got onto a story about I was interviewing the president of George Mason back in the summer, and a guy that was there watching gave me a story tip about a woman who was embezzling from a guy who turned out to be a world-famous DJ. I never heard of him, but he is a big deal. When he plays clubs, I mean, he gets thousands of people to come watch him play his music. And he's located in Great Falls, Virginia, of all places. He's a world-famous guy
to
those people.
He's got a nice house.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he has a lot of dough. I mean, he's won Grammys. He won a Grammy for remixing Dido's song, Thank You, which probably need to be remixed more. But anyway, he won, and he's a big deal. Well, anyway, this woman just was stealing him blind, left and right, and was a great tip. Then it turned out she has been married a number of times, but not quite divorced as many times, and that she'd been convicted and done time already for somebody else, and this world-famous guy hired her. And so from the first story, and then I've gone to see her in court, and she spoke to me and told me an even wackier story, and so I've written about it two or three times, and yeah, man, I'm going to always follow up.
These stories have legs.
There you go.
Since you brought up crime, you spent a good deal of time covering the courts
right.
For the Post. And that can be a real challenging, but also can be kind of fun and rewarding experience. You know, I know one of the cases you covered was the D.C. sniper.
Right.
Tell us about that case and what that, you know, how much did you write? How many stories did you write about that? And what were the challenges
of
that?
Just 1,000. So when the shootings happened, everybody at the Post was writing that.
Crazy.
So that was in 2002. Then the cases were sent to Virginia for trial. So that's where I became one of the lead guys. There was one case in Fairfax County for Malvo and one in Prince William for Muhammad. So I had the Fairfax case and Josh White had the Muhammad case. And I thought, this is great. You know, this is in my courthouse. I know where everything is. I know who everyone is.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, whenever they file stuff, I'm here. CNN's not in Fairfax. NBC
right.
News isn't in Fairfax. I'm going to own this baby. Well, they set up a website and posted everything on the web, that dumb circuit court. And so gave everybody equal access to
all the
pleadings.
It'd be nice if they did that with all their cases.
Exactly. And so, but it was still highly competitive and it was great to, you know, have the world media there. And then we all trucked down to Chesapeake, Virginia for the trial. And I had a terrific advantage over them by having been in that courthouse for years and knowing all the players and having people maybe whisper some things in my ear when the thing wasn't going on. And so it was neat. I mean, it was a horrible, sad story, and the people who suffered from it were there as well. And I went out the night that the shooting happened at the Home Depot in Falls Church where Linda Franklin was killed and you know, covered that from the first day. And, you know, it was a historic, horrible thing, and we covered the heck out of it.
We had Laura Miko in a few weeks. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She does a website, Homicide Watch DC.
I am.
Where they cover every murder in DC. And we talked a bit about, and we took a bit, that's all we talked about, crime reporting. You know, how important is that?
Did she actually go out and report, or does she just sort of create the database?
Because she created the database. She would go to the court. She would cover the trial. She would cover the hearings. It was a bit of both. So yeah. But anyway, let me ask you that as a, you know, how important is it to be that beat reporter to, you know, follow that case through?
I think it's huge. I think that the people that want information about these cases benefit from that. And there's a lot of people that wanted information about the sniper case, and there's people that want information about every crime case. And by knowing the cops and knowing the prosecutors and knowing the defense lawyers and knowing the judges, somebody who's been there for a while provides way better public service to everybody who wants that information, which you aren't otherwise going to get just by taking the handouts from the press releases.
Mm-hmm.
That was my goal, was to write better, do better stories and more informative stories and be more informative than everybody else.
And this is me getting on my soapbox again. Do you know Mike Pope from
sure.
the Alexandria Gazette?
Yeah.
Now, he's had a bit of a crusade about FOIA.
Right.
And about the fact that in Virginia, well, he covers mostly Alexandria, about, you know, what the police are telling and what they're not telling the press.
Right.
And this is, you know, as newspapers are folding, as big newspapers cut back their staffs, as, you know, different aspects, including community journalism and including crime reporting gets cut away, you're losing that layer of oversight that.
That's exactly right. I mean, guys like Mike Pope do a great job and a great service, and he has written stories that have showed the public, look, this has happened, and here's what the police aren't telling us consistently. And, you know, I made a request to the Arlington police, and they said, yeah, we'll give you that for $500. You know, it's our copying fee or something. The last story he wrote was just straight outrage. And he writes one about every 6 months or year or so about just attempting to get public information from a publicly supported body. I've been banging my head against this wall for a long time. I'm used to it. I write those stories, too. I'm getting ready to write another one. The Fairfax County Police told me on Friday, we are no longer going to release the cause and manner of death
wow.
in any case.
Really?
Did that come from that recent case that you just wrote about?
It came from the case of the kid who died in the woods in Fairfax, who had disappeared from his high school. He just didn't show up for school one day, and then they searched for him, and the police didn't find him, and a week later, his friends found him in the woods. And the police at the time, in October of last year, would not say how the guy died. You know, did somebody take him into the woods and beat him to death? Did he kill himself? Did he, you know, fall asleep and never wake up? I mean, what happened? The police said, well, we're going to wait for the medical examiner. So I kept calling the police and saying, what's up? What's up? And finally they said, it's over. We're not telling you. Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can call the medical examiner. And in the meantime, because I'd been covering this beat for a long time, I wrote a story back in October that said, look, I'm sorry to tell everybody this, but this kid hanged himself in the woods. And this caused something of a stir, but I felt people needed to know. Mm-hmm. You know, there were discussions going on. I watched them at Little League because my kids play at those Little League fields where parents were terrified, as if there was a murderer walking around, snatching people out of the parking lot and dragging them into the woods. Well, that wasn't what happened. That kid got out of his car, walked into the woods, and hung himself. It's terrible. And it raised the other issue, which is the media in general do not cover suicides because we don't want to glorify them. They're private matters. We don't want to encourage people to do it and go out in a blaze of glory. And there's too many. You wouldn't believe how many people commit suicide.
At the Connection, we had a family that had come to us to talk about a girl who had committed suicide. And it was very unusual. And we heard from both the police and the school about the fact that we had reported this. And they were like, oh, you shouldn't do this and everything. But it wasn't so much, we weren't telling about the suicide. We were telling about the effect that it was having on the family and it was having on their friends. And these are stories that impact. You know, I mentioned Mike Pope, and you touched on this a little bit. I mean, the oversight that the press has on public bodies is usually important of the journalistic mission. And you know, these staffs are getting cut. This is a level of news that people are not getting.
And at the same time, there's a tendency among the government agencies toward less transparency.
Yes.
We're seeing this now with states wanting to hide their concealed weapon permit holder databases and having some success with that. I think that's going to happen in Virginia. It's happening in New York State. And, you know, and now here's Fairfax County saying, well, we're not going to tell you how this person died anymore. That's for the medical examiner to do. And I suppose technically that's right. And I feel sorry because the medical examiner is going to start getting a lot more calls than they ever did. But just, you know, how it's been done through history, and it was not violating anyone's rights to privacy to say that guy over there was hit by a car, or, you know, that lady fell out of a tree, and she died, accidental death, broken neck.
Yeah.
No, you got to, you know, we can't tell you that anymore.
No. I mean, these things are, you know, these are important stories that need to be told, and I can certainly respect the perspective of the government agency or the police who may want to protect a case,
right?
But we're not, we understand that there are things we can't write about for reasons. But there are other things that under that umbrella, other things are getting swept under it, and you know, things that the public has the right to know about what their agencies are doing. I mean, police shooting. How do we know if the police are negligible? Who's investigating? Well, they're investigating themselves. If you don't have oversight over that, well, then you know, what does that mean? What will that lead to?
There was a police shooting in Alexandria last week that there's virtually no information out there on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's frustrating to go out there and try to cover it. One of the things we try to do in these discussions is the type of beat that you have. You know, what is somebody who's coming into the field? What is it they need? What should they sort of? How should they prepare themselves, and why should they be a community reporter?
I would like to say it is rocket science, but it is not. It is simply going out with a pen and paper and asking people what's happening, why, how, who, what, where. It's really easy, and it does involve, you know, getting out from behind your desk and going out and seeing people and finding out information. I think the fun thing is finding out stuff people don't know and telling it to them. And that's the service that we provide is bringing new information forward. And I wish it did require a lot of training, but I don't think it does. I think that anybody can do it. I think I'm proof of that. I didn't go to journalism school, and I started out with needing a lot of training. I once, early on in Kansas City, was sent to a murder scene, and I came back, and the editor said, well, how did she die? I didn't quite ask that question. And so you learn, and I went back out to the crime scene and found out how she died, which I guess the police wouldn't tell me anymore, but you learn, and you get better, and you learn how to find things out, and you learn how to talk to people and how to listen. Listening, massively important. It's really the biggest skill is listening. And then, you know, being persistent and being patient and being thoughtful, all of which are not qualities that you teach anyone in school or that, you know, I'm going to the persistence class today. These are things that you get through experience and that you get by doing. And it's really fun to do. It's a great job. And after you've done your persistence and your patience and your listening and your note-taking and your research and you write it all up, you have this cathartic release because you've created something and then you get to see it. And then even better, a lot of times, especially this is the part I like best about being online, you get to have reaction. You know, for many years, you write an article, it goes in the newspaper, Glamo, and then, you know, you don't know if anybody read it.
Right.
And now here, boy, I know, you know, and also if I have anything wrong, I know.
Yeah.
They tell me.
And
right
it's a lot easier to correct it online than it is.
And I'm happy to do that. I want it to be right. I want people to tell me when I get stuff wrong. I want to be right. I want it to be definitive and accurate.
Well, I think that's a great place to stop. I really appreciate you coming in. This is really great. Again, your stateofnova.
Right.
.com.
WashingtonPost.com/stateofnova.
State of Nova. And how if somebody wants to reach you by email or Twitter?
JackmanT@WashPost.com for email and at State of Nova for my many, many tweeting insights.
You do tweet.
No. I do tweet some.
You have quite a following on Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm a wise guy.
You're a wise guy. I remember seeing you. This is my opportunity to ask you that. Do you tweet from court?
Sometimes. I don't cover as much court as I used to.
Because I remember seeing tweets at some case last year.
Well, there
year.
Was a case where a guy was claiming that he couldn't have been drunk driving on the Beltway because he was in the back seat of the car having sex at the time.
Right.
It was a complete lie. And it was just a pleading that somebody had tipped me off to that I wrote a 3, maybe 4 paragraphs about. Well, it went berserk on the old intranet, and so the trial was the following Monday, and the guy tried to stick to this defense that he wasn't driving when the car smashed into the back of a cabbie and caused the cab serious damage and caused the cab driver serious damage. So it wasn't a completely frivolous case, but it was a frivolous thing that the guy said on the side of the highway, which was, hey, Mr. State Trooper, I wasn't driving. You know, I was back here in the back with, you know.
Well, then who was driving?
Or was he driving? That was a small problem. Small problem. He tried to say, well, there was another guy in the car, but he got out and ran, which, you know, easy to do on the Beltway.
Have you ever been told you can't tweet from court?
Yeah. I mean, there has, well, I haven't. I know that that is an ongoing issue with courts. They're trying to figure that out. Fairfax County so far has allowed it. I haven't tried it anywhere else.
But you can't, your phone, that what you're tweeting with, you don't have a camera on it, right? Because you can't bring that in.
They've changed the rule in Fairfax.
Thank God.
And do let you bring in phones with cameras now. And before that, I had because I'd been covering the beat for so many years, I had a special card and I could get around the metal detector and bring in my heater.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Well, thanks for coming in, Tom. This is really an enjoyable
Very
conversation.
Welcome. It was fun.
Here, this is Mike O'Connell. I'm here with Gene Brooks from the ONA.
Thanks for having me.
Online News Association. If people want to find out more about ONA, how can they do that?
They can visit our website at journalists.org. That's journalists with an S at the end, or follow us at ONA.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of the media. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or find out more information about us at itsalljournalism.com. We'd like to hear what you have to say. If you have topics you'd like us to cover or suggestions about who to interview, email us at editor@itsalljournalism.com. Also look for It's All Journalism on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @AllJournalism.